Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. This is how Swami Satchidananda would begin any talk he gave. And this week we mark the anniversary of Papa's Sannyas Day, the day that he took initiation from Ram into the time of his life that he practiced intense sadhana. Papa writes in his own book, that's autobiography, that in quest of God, for nearly a year, Ram Dass struggled on with a world full of cares, anxieties, and pains. It was a period of terrible stress and restlessness, all of his own making. In this utterly helpless condition, full of misery, where is relief? Where is rest? This was the heart's cry of Ram Dass. The cry was heard, and from a great void came the voice, despair not, trust me, and thou shalt be free. And this was the voice of Ram, or God. These encouraging words of Ram proved like a plank thrown towards a man struggling for very life in the stormy waves of a raging sea. The great assurance soothed the aching heart of helpless Ram Dass, like rain on a thirsty earth. Thenceforth, a part of the time that was formerly totally devoted to worldly affairs was taken up for the meditation of Ram, who for that period gave him real peace and relief. Gradually, love for Ram, the giver of peace, increased. The more Ram Dass meditated and uttered his name, the greater the relief and joy he felt. Nights, which were free from worldly duties, were, of course, time utilized for Ram Bhajan. With scarcely 1 or 2 hours rest, his devotion for Ram progressed by leaps and bounds. During the day, when cares and anxieties were besetting him due to monetary and other troubles, Ram was coming to his aid in unexpected ways. So whenever free from worldly duties, be the period ever so small, he would meditate on Ram and utter his name. Walking in the streets, he would be uttering Ram, Ram. Ram Dass was now losing attraction for the objects of the world. Sleep, except for 1 or 2 hours in the night, was given up for the sake of Ram. Fineries in clothing and dress were replaced by coarse khadar. Bed was substituted by a bare mat. Food, first 2 meals, was reduced to 1 meal, and after some time this too was given up for plantains and boiled potatoes. Chilies and salt were totally eschewed. No taste but for Ram. Meditation of Ram continued apace. It encroached upon the hours of the day and the so-called worldly duties. At this stage, one day, Ram Dass' father came to him, sent by Ram, and calling him aside, gave him the Upadesh of Ram mantra. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Assuring him that if he repeated this mantra at all times, Ram would give him eternal happiness. The initiation from the father, who was thereafter looked upon by Ram Dass as Guru Dev, hastened on the aspirant in his spiritual progress. Off and on, he was prompted by Ram to read the teachings of Sri Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita, Buddha, Light of Asia, Jesus Christ, New Testament, Mahatma Gandhi, Young India, and Ethical Religion. The young plant of bhakti in Ram was thus nurtured in the electric atmosphere created by the influence of these great men on the mind of humble Ram Dass. It was at this time that it slowly dawned upon his mind that Ram was the only reality and all else was false. Whilst desires for enjoyment of worldly things were fast falling off, the consideration of me and mine was also wearing out. The sense of possession and relationship was vanishing. All thought, all mind, all heart, all soul was concentrated on Ram, Ram covering up and absorbing everything. Now from the narrow pond of worldly life, Ram had lifted up his slave to throw him into an extensive ocean of a universal life. But to swim in the wide ocean, Ram knew Ram Dass wanted strength and courage, for gaining which Ram intended to make his ignorant and untrained slave to pass through a course of severe discipline, and this under his direct guidance and support. So one night, while engaged in drinking in the sweetness of his name, Ram Dass was made to think in the following strain. O Ram, when thy slave finds thee at once so powerful and so loving, and that he who trusts thee can be sure of true peace and happiness, why should he not throw himself entirely on thy mercy, which can only be possible by giving up everything he called mine? Thou art all and all to thy slave. Thou art the sole protector in the world. Men are deluded when they declare, I do this, I do that. This is mine, that is mine. All, O Ram, is thine, and all things are done by thee alone. Thy slave's one prayer to thee is to take him under thy complete guidance and remove this I-ness. This prayer was heard. Ram Dass' heart heaved a deep sigh. A hazy desire to renounce all and wander over the earth in the garb of a mendicant in quest of Ram wafted over his mind. Now Ram prompted him to open at random the book Light of Asia, which was before him at that time. His eyes rested upon the pages wherein is described the great renunciation of Buddha, who says, For now the hour is come when I should quit this golden prison, where my heart lives caged, to find the truth, which henceforth I will seek, for all men's sake, until the truth be found. Then Ram Dass similarly opened the New Testament and lighted upon the following definite words of Jesus Christ. And everyone that has forsaken houses, or brethren, or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands for my name's sake, shall receive a hundredfold, and shall inherit everlasting life. And then again he was actuated in the same way to refer to the Bhagavad Gita, and he read the following shloka. Abandoning all duties, come to me alone for shelter. Sorrow not, I will liberate thee from all sins. Ram Dass had thus spoken out through the words, Ram had thus spoken out through the words of these three great avatars, Buddha, Christ, and Krishna. And all of them pointed to the same path, renunciation. At once, Ram Dass made up his mind to give up, for the sake of Ram, all that he till then hugged to his bosom as his own, and lead the samsaric world. During this period, he was very simple in his dress, which consisted of a piece of cloth covering the upper part of the body and another wound around the lower part. Next day, he got two clothes of this kind dyed in garua or red ochre, and the same night wrote two letters, one to his wife, whom Ram had made him look upon for some time past as his sister, and another to a kind friend, whom Ram had brought in touch with Ram Dass for his deliverance from debts. The resolution was made. At 5 o'clock in the morning, he bade farewell to the world for which he had lost all attraction, and which he could find nothing to call his own. The body, the mind, and the soul were all laid at the feet of Ram, the eternal being full of love and mercy. And thus begins the life of Papa, later known as Papa. It was Mother Krishnabai who became such a devoted disciple of Papa's, and she didn't care for the word Ram that much. She couldn't relate to it. Ram was a historical figure who is known as an avatar, that is, divinity descended into flesh. And Papa was enamored with the word Ram, and it was part of his mantra, Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And Papa added the word Om to it, and he said by doing that, he had reduced the amount of repetitions it takes to get full realization. It's such a powerful mantra. Ram meaning the everlasting God, the eternal God that is within. And Jai Ram, Jai meaning victory. So it's victory to God, victory to God. And he would repeat that over and over again. And he felt such bliss in doing so. It started to purify him, body, mind, and soul. And from this time, he took up this red cloth and started to travel all over the India. At first, he had a few rupees with him, but eventually, he gave those away. And then he went without any purse. He went without any thought of where he would go next, led only by the intuition of where Ram was leading him. And taking him all around India, he would go from place to place. Finally, he settled into a cave, not that far from where he had started from, after he had traveled for a year all around India. And there, from midnight until 3 a.m., by kerosene lantern, he would write the In Search of God, Man's Eternal Quest. And so through this, he became known somewhat throughout India. And it was a wonderful thing that he did. I wanted to read also, because from him started this ashram, Anandashram, that Mother got so much benefit. And then later on came time that I stayed there and received such wonderful benefit there as well. Papa was no longer in the body. Mataji was no longer in the body, but Swami Satchidananda was there, a wonderfully realized man, and Mother had brought me to his feet so that he might help me in that final mile toward God realization. And I took a diary while I was there, 1998, 1999. And this is some of the diary from Papa Sannyas Day. The ashram is active with family and children, many programs, 24 hours of Ramnam at the Mandirs. That is done especially for in marking Papa's Sannyas Day, that they chanted for 24 hours Ramnam. I walked around the ashram grounds last night, and like a small community, couples were out walking, children playing. It was quite different in a delightful way. Many devotees from all over India have come, and there are subtle hints as to who are the respected patriarchs and matriarchs. This morning, as I walked around the grounds, as well as last night, there was a heavenly perfume in the air. One will often catch the scent of flowers here, as they grow in profusion and used daily for garlands. But this fragrance that I smelled far surpassed the occasional whiff of flora and incense. It was pleasing beyond description, coming with a clear sense that it was a manifestation of Papa's sweetness. There are higher forces at work here, reminding me of love's sweet magic. Swamiji was telling me they tried to stop all celebrations, such as Papa's Sannyas Day, at the ashram. One year, Mataji even went so far as to lock the ashram gates. However, a family had traveled from a distant part of India and arrived at the gate. What to do? They could not be turned away. Then it was decided that sweets should be distributed to devotees for prasad on special occasions. And gradually it all grew back into full-scale celebrations. When Swamiji announced Mataji's Mahasamadhi celebration, he omitted reference to his 50th sannyas anniversary, coming a few days later. When I asked Swamiji whether I should attend, he said, "Certainly. Such are the shifting winds of a saint. Oh, such blessings to be in those winds, even if they be a mighty storm. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti." And then continued later that day at 11:35. All night chanting continues at Papa's Mandir. The men have taken up sides over the flowered sarcophagus, on one side rapidly chanting Ram Nam while shaking fingers at the other side. And the other side returns the favor, looking like a pep rally. The men of all ages are twirling, dancing, sometimes with one another, some smiling, some laughing, some looking intent, all fully engaged in the night chanting. It is an emotionally charged party for ecstatic lovers of God. As I walk about the grounds at midnight, it is a beautiful half-moon night. Even when the temperature is nearly 80 degrees, some are sporting mufflers and wool caps. This pep rally is really not my style, so I yield the floor to the exuberant. I spend the night circumnavigating the ashram grounds, chanting the holy words, feeling myself to be in the company of our beloved Papa. Today we celebrate Papa setting out to transform himself, and in doing so, he transformed the world. Earlier this evening, Swamiji joyfully said that 10 new devotees took initiation earlier that morning. This is done by listening to a tape recording of Papa giving initiation into Ram Nam. They used the tape recorder I had given to the ashram in celebration of Mother's birthday and Christmas. We spoke of Papa and all that had happened because one man had committed to change himself and find God. I said, "May it spread all over the world." Swamiji simply replied, "Yes," with a beatific smile. Having been initiated by Mother into Ram Nam, I gladly endorse it, its use for all. How divinely simple to love the vibration of the name of God, to feel the all-powerful name entering into our beings and lift us up above all attachments and limiting habits, to make us feel the bliss and peace of God. Oh, victory to God. Victory to the vibration of Om and Ram. Victory to finding joy and having dispassion for things of the world. Victory be yours. Victory to all. May Papa's blessing spread all over this world. And then later that day, the next day, while Swamiji came round the Bhajan hall and all were singing Ram Nam, the setting sun lit the clouds with a brilliant Swami orange. The Mandir has just closed after 24 hours of chanting Ram Nam. Then the chanters marched around the ashram with the sacred name on their lips. As we looked at the sunset panorama of color, I commented to a man standing next to me, "It is as if the heavens themselves are proclaiming Papa's Sannyas Day." The cymbal player standing next to me said, "You are being a poet, sir." I said, "No, it is all of nature that is poetry." Swamiji, listening to this exchange, said, "You do not have to put on sannyas clothing to be a renunciant. Many who have not taken sannyas vows are not attached to anything." This was a time I felt he was speaking directly into my soul. The meaning and vibration of his words went into the very cells of my body. He continued, "Many householders live in this way. They have tyaga, inner renunciation. They have things, but their attitude is that God has given it to them and will take it away sometime. It is this way they are unattached to the things of the world. Others may not know it about them, but still it is true." After some moments of reflection, I said, "The world may not know it, but God knows it. Swamiji, yes, the world may not know it. I felt these were God's instructions to my very soul. Oh, what blessings to be in the presence of a God being. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Another entry. Learning to imbibe spiritual truths is essential to leading a spiritual life and a precursor for absorbing truth directly from the source. One will hear themes emphasized again and yet again. The reason? So that we may initially grasp a truth intellectually, then put it into practice always, and finally to realize that truth completely. It is a fantastic venture. Those who are practicing all three levels of coming into the truth by the intellect, through practice, and then in deepening realization are being helped by the teacher repeating certain aphorisms and stories. Also, due to the fact the master speaks with a deep level of realization, his or her words are impregnated with the highest vibration. Since the source of this for a truly realized soul is God consciousness, his very speech has the power to lift the consciousness of the listener to the greatest heights of which he or she is capable. The power of God within the guru may even stretch the capacity of disciples to their limits and even beyond. The beams of Mother's radiance were so great I often had a headache after meeting with her, feeling that I had been through a workout just to be in her presence. Even when the topic seemed more mundane, with Mother everything was God, so there is no strict distinction between worldly and spiritually topics. Feeling bored, sleepy, or other tamasic reactions while in the Master's presence are the ego's attempt at stalling spiritual progress for the sadhaka. I heard this before, and I know all of this, is the ego keeping the devotee from going deeper, taking the next step and getting over barriers. This is the life and challenge for becoming spiritually illumined. All lessons in life are contained in discipleship. The first order is to find a realized master who has a commission from God and Guru to bring souls back to their source. And then surrendering to their teachings is the way to God. Mother would always say to listen to the Guru within. But the outer Guru has also come to round off the sharp edges of the aspirant. A master's training can test you through and through. One needs to be careful that it is not the ego within giving directions. The sincere devotee will always be led correctly. Whatever your path, when it is true, it will lead you to greater purity of mind, to be more highly attuned, and in spirit inner harmony with highest truth. May we all learn perfect discipleship to God and Guru. As Mother quoted Master, God is the Guru. We are all His disciples. Om Tat Sat. And an additional note, when Swamiji said, we use the new tape recorder, the one that I had given as a gift, for the initiation. I said, so Swamiji, the new tape recorder was also initiated. He had a good laugh over this. And continued later that day, as long as you identify with any aspect of individual self, you are by definition not being the true self. If, for example, you have pleasure or pain in a particular part of your body, let us say a finger, as the finger, you are not the toe. You may see the toe as a competitor for food, energy, and attention. Your arm perfectly knows your finger is its extension, but the finger may not recognize the arm as its source. The heart and brain both may claim to have superiority to the finger. But in reality, they are all parts of one body that functions best when all parts operate harmoniously. One part of the body may sacrifice itself for the whole if there is an extreme need. For instance, a hand may be sacrificed if infected with gangrene. The mind tends to focus on one part of the body or another, but pure consciousness is aware of the whole in a way the mind cannot. When all parts work together, it creates the optimal person. Consciousness knows the mind, heart, and all body parts are part of self. When all parts cooperate with self, harmony is created. When self and all parts cooperate with the Supreme Self, a beautiful state of being is achieved. And when the self of soul is merged with the universal being of God, perfection is attained. Whether it is a finger and toe, neighbor and neighbor, or nation and nation, when all recognize their individual roles and their oneness in spirit, then the golden age will have arrived. Om, peace, bliss, amen. And finally, the lessons of a child. This evening, while having darshan with Swamiji, a mother, father, and a child who was walking pretty well were also there. Some wonderful lessons were in the making as I entered. All the fun of Ram. Lesson number one. Swamiji loves children who visit him. He claps for them, puts them on his lap, gives them candy, then tells them not to eat too much candy. And children are totally glued to him. Tonight he gave his crystal pendulum to a toddler. The child had great fun with it. He carried it about, swinging it, batting with it. Meanwhile, Swamiji was cool and calm as he looked on. Then the child picked up a plastic ruler sitting on Swamiji's table and played with the ruler with equal enthusiasm, then moved on to his mother's watch. All that he played with, he did without differentiation. Swamiji's precious crystal, a plastic ruler, his mother's watch. Lesson: to one who is childlike, all the world is seen equally. The lump of gold, the diamond, or the clod of earth are the same. A realized soul sees the entire universe reflected in a dewdrop hanging from a blade of grass. Lesson number two. Whenever the child came within danger of harming something in the room or in being harmed himself, the mother rushed to his protection, whereas the father sat in repose. Lesson: the mother of the universe cares for every one of our needs if we depend upon her completely. Lesson number three. As I was leaving from across the room, I kneeled to Swamiji. Just as I bowed down, the little boy, who is none other than Krishna himself, positioned his feet in front of me. I touched the boy's feet, and then I pranamed to Swamiji. As soon as I touched the little boy's feet, he immediately sat statue still and remained that way. Lesson: when we recognize the true divinity in one another, that divinity is awakened and brings about inner and outer stillness. That is the wonder of saints. They see us as divine, which awakens in us the self-same purity of which the saint is made. Hare Om, Hare Krishna, Om, Om. I've been typing in these diary notes, as I think, in honor of Swamiji's 100th anniversary of his birth this year, that I would dedicate these diary notes to him, because he had such a tremendous influence on me. When I went to Anandashram, I thought at first that I was going there simply to practice deepening sadhana, that it would be a place where, of course, there was a chanting of God's name, that I could perhaps stay in my room and meditate, and then also be chanting Om Shri Ram. And that's how I thought it might go. But after some little time, and it didn't take much, I recognized that Swamiji was a tremendously God-realized being. He was so different than my own guru. My own guru is so powerful walking into a room. And when she spoke with such tremendous power of God. And it was tremendous, it really was. With Swamiji, there is the same signature of God consciousness, but it was expressed so differently. He was quiet in his expressions. He didn't say much, but when he spoke, it had great meaning to it. And oftentimes, as I said, it would seem as if he would speak directly to my soul, and I felt those words and the vibration of it, even as with Mother, go directly into me. I felt that Mother had brought me there so that Swamiji could help me go all the way towards my God consciousness. I had gone through many experiences when Mother gave me the title of Yogacharya. She said that I had gone through nearly everything that she had in terms of the mystical crucifixion. Now, not everything that she went through, I went through. She had the Christ seed come up in her own mouth, and it came as a styrofoam-type capsule, she said, with one perfect drop of blood in it. For years, it felt like a stone in my throat. And I tried to work it up, but eventually it began to dissipate. And she said, not everybody has that experience where it comes out in a physical form into the mouth. But I knew that what I had experienced in my throat was similar to what Mother had been speaking about, that Christ seed coming up. I had not perfected myself in the way that Mother had. I hadn't done everything in perfect accord with her teachings. And I still knew that I had more to go. I still knew that there was something I had to do to go all the way to God consciousness so that I might have it so completely, so thoroughly that there is no break from it, that there is never a time when I was out of God consciousness. That is called Sahaja Samadhi, natural state, where you are not having to work at it. As Swamiji said, when you get to that state, you don't no longer have to practice sadhana because you are in a continuous state of that. So this is a wonderful thing to get to, and it is what we are ultimately aiming for. But it takes purification, and how near or how far we are from the goal, we cannot say, because the mind does not have the capacity for measuring that. It would be a case of the mind being able to observe the mind, and it can't get outside of itself to do that. So we aspire for God. We go for God in all the ways that we know how. There is a time, as with Papa, when God really picks you up and you realize there is nothing other than that that you wish to have in this life. Before that, life is a mixed picture. You want God realization. You're striving for it. And yet there are other things as well in life that you are also striving for. There's competition for that. And so you go with both. Mother oftentimes encouraged people in their professions. She encouraged them in relationships and so on. She preferred in general for people to be married, to have professions, to ask for the proper amount of money if they were working for somebody else. So she encouraged people in this way. And she helped people to strive to attain the things in life that they had come to do. Good things, positive things. And things that would help them to perfect their personalities. When you go to God, you come to the point where you realize this world really cannot offer you what you are truly needing. As long as the world is in competition with your desire for God, then you'll have mixed results. And so Mother would help people to achieve those things in life that they would say, yes, all right, I've had that experience. I know what that can bring to me. And it's not that this world is a terrible, awful place to be. This world offers many advantages. There are many good things about this world. And in aspiring for those good things, we actually help to perfect ourselves. Because unless we have that experience, there's some nagging part in the back of the subconscious mind that thinks, but if I only had that, then I would be happy. And that keeps us in competition with our true goal, with going all the way to God consciousness. Because God does not intrude upon our free will. He has given us free will. And it is up to us to determine, what do I truly want in life? It is not a matter of you have to feel bad because God isn't first in your life, in the sense that you can be striving for things in this life, what Mother would call salt of the earth types, can be good people, but they have no aspiration for anything other than this life. They're working out their karma on their own level. And when they have gone through enough worldly experience, you eventually get to that point where you just realize this world can't really make you happy. There's nothing in it that you can attain that you would think, this is it. This is what I have striven for. And then there are those who think, well, when I die, then I'll know the answers. Then I'll be in heaven. Then I'll have real happiness. But for an aspirant, there comes a time when that's not satisfactory either. It must be now. It must come. And because we have that intense desire, then God brings us to someone who can lift us up, who can help us. I realized at an early point that of myself, I was doing a lot of reading. I was absorbing a lot of ideas about spirituality. But I knew that I was missing out on some key essential aspects. And that I needed someone who had gone the way. Somehow, God put that into me. I did read a book where a man met his guru, and it was an emotional moment. And he had tears coming down his eyes, and this is all brand new to me at the time. But somehow, in myself, I didn't think about necessarily having an emotional reunion. But I did think about, I need to know somebody who knows this, who's been the way, who can help me find the way towards the truth. And that started me on a long journey of search. When I look back on it now, it wasn't a tremendously long period of time. It was less than a year. But at the time, it seemed like an eternity. And as I looked for my teacher, for my guru, I went from this one to that one. And I thought, no, not this, not that. When I met Mother, I felt the power of God in her. I was lifted up by her speech. She spoke about things I had no real knowledge about. And yet I realized that even when she used the word God, which generally I was not interested in at the time, that I wasn't looking for the nearest exit. She used it in a completely different, totally new way. Sometimes people get tripped up on words because they have past associations that are unpleasant to them, things that they have rejected. I never rejected God, but I didn't feel like I knew anything about God. There could be a God, there may not be a God. I just simply didn't know. And I wasn't going to pretend to something that I didn't have any understanding of. So Mother began me on this brand new journey. So this is the way that it is for us. When we come to that point, and God brings us to one who can take us all the way, And because I had not completed that journey, then God took me to Swami Satchidananda after Mother's passing. And Mother had such love and such regard for Swamiji. She used to call him Satch, as Swami Satchidananda, as a nickname. Something I would never do, but that she would do. And she had great love for him. And they exchanged letters with one another and so on. So it's a wonderful thing to have this relationship. And I oftentimes said that Swamiji was my second mother in the sense that he had come to help me, even if Papa had come to help Mother. And so God provided, even though I was slow and I was a laggard and I wasn't getting my complete realization while Mother was still in the body, that was my fault. Nothing with her. She would oftentimes say, if you worked even a portion of how hard I work for you to get your God realization, you would have it in a hurry. But we are of mixed desires. And this time when Papa took on the sannyas cloth, he had such intense desire for God. And I remember coming back from a spiritual service up in Victoria, coming back on the ferry and getting off of the ferry and then seeing all these pumpkins. It was fall time, obviously. Seeing all these pumpkins out in the field. They were this wonderful, bright orange. And I thought they looked like so many different flames out there. And then it suddenly occurred to me, that's why sadhus and swamis wear orange. Because that flame of the kundalini is burning in them. The flame of renunciation is burning inside of them, if they are what they should be. And so that came as a revelation to me at the time, that this orange color was that of the flame of the kundalini and purification. And how wonderful that was. And that Papa came to the point where he no longer wore the orange, he wore white. And I thought, well, the flame had done its job. And everything inside of him was purified, so his color was now white instead of orange. He wasn't in that stage any longer. And isn't that wonderful? So this journey that we take of sannyas, we do not need to wear that orange color on the outside. I've met many different swamis. And most of them don't measure up. It's not that they're necessarily hypocrites. They just haven't really achieved that intense renunciation yet. They can even live the life somewhat on the outside. But on the inside, they aren't there yet. They may be members of organizations, and they may be there and wearing it as a status. When Swamiji was having these celebrations at the ashram, there were many Westerners who had come there. And so, I think with a little sense of humor, Swami Satchidananda put me in charge, what he said, put me in charge of the Westerners. And every time Swami Muktananda, who was Gopi at the time, he would see me, and from a distance, he would start laughing with his great bass laugh, wonderful laugh, and he would say, there's David in charge of the Westerners. And he just break into gales of laughter. And I thought, why is he laughing so much? Then I had to deal with the Westerners. And Westerners tend to be a whiny bunch. And I don't like this, and I don't like that, and I want this, and I want that. And they were all directed to me. And I thought, that's why Swami Muktananda is laughing, because he doesn't have to deal with it now. They've left it to me. And there was a group of swamis who were getting together on a porch. They're supposed to be down in the sadhudam. That's an area for the swamis. And they were up on this porch, and all night long they were chanting. And some of the Westerners came to me and they said, they're keeping us up at night because they're chanting. And I thought, well, what's wrong with that? But they were complaining, so I took it to Swamiji. And so I asked the swamis first, or the sadhus, would they move? And they said, no. This is our ashram. It's made for us, not for you. And we're not going to move. And they were officially not in the correct spot, so that's when I took it to Swamiji. and he sent somebody, and they were removed not only from the porch but from the ashram itself. They didn't have the right attitude because they had that arrogance, they had that ego. And this isn't the way that it should be when you're wearing this orange color. But we all may have that inwardly orange color. I remember a woman talking to me. She's a Westerner, and she was following a path of Buddhism. And there was a woman nun who was encouraging her to become, this woman to become a nun. And she said, well, I'm not ready to shave my head yet. And she said, well, first you shave the inside of your head, then later the outside of your head, meaning you get inner renunciation first. But there's no need for many to have the outer garb or the outer conditions of a sannyas life. It's something that we find inside of ourselves. You gradually begin to feel that this world is not quite real. It is dreamlike as you are feeling the higher reality of God inside of you. There's an uptake along with the dispassion that you might have for this world. Yesterday I was in getting some tests and a CT scan and an MRI, and they have a hard time with me, harder than usual yesterday, getting blood from me and finding that. And they took 8 pokes for them to be able to get it, and finally they gave up on it. They just couldn't get it. And there was 3 different nurses in there. And I have been sitting there, and I've been chanting and feeling all of God. And they all said, you're the best patient we've ever had. And the one woman who the lead nurse there, she says, I've been doing this for over 25 years. We've never had anybody like you. We keep on poking you, and you're smiling, and you're chatting with us, and you're great. And the reason was, is because I was feeling so much God as I was laying there and going through all of these procedures. And it's the way that God has made it all the way through all these medical procedures. Even when they've cut into me and taken parts out and all the rest of it, I've never felt any terrific pain because I felt so much of the bliss of God. So this is God and the uptake. It's not us just a whole lot of negatives. I can't do this, I can't do that. I shouldn't feel attached to this or that. That God should be growing inside of you. And as the feeling of God grows, now you have to practice a certain amount of dispassion for this world, because if you put other things first, the feeling of God and the presence of God inside of you will not grow. But as you practice that and you put God first, it doesn't mean you have to throw ashes on your food like St. Francis used to do, or do other kinds of things to spoil any kind of your sensory experiences. You just put God first. And if you notice that something else is getting to be more important to you, you recognize that, and you work on it. And you put God more important than anything that you'd experience in this world, any person, any mood that you might have inside of you. You learn to identify those things that supersedes the supremacy of God consciousness inside of you. And it's the inner meaning of when it says that you should have no carved idols on the altar, that it should be God only. And a carved idol is any image of a thing that supersedes your feeling of connection with God. And so you pay attention to that. And if it doesn't really supersede your feeling of God, then there's nothing that much you have to do about it. You just keep your attention upon God. And you can still have little enjoyments in this world as long as it doesn't replace God up on the altar. And in this way, you gain renunciation for this world. you're wearing that orange robe on the inside because that kundalini is burning inside of you. It's purifying. It's lifting you up. And more you feel the bliss, you feel the joy, you feel the enlightenment that comes with this purifying flame. It does its work. And gradually you're doing less and less, but feeling more and more. And your part is to keep your mind on God. And let Him do the work. Let the divine grace grow inside of you. Until you're feeling all of the beauty. And then God may take you out of this world. Not necessarily through death, but just simply that He absorbs you in Himself. I've been feeling that so greatly. And as a result of that, I haven't interacted with the world. And I feel that more and more. And I feel that absorbed, and I feel that oneness with Him. And then other times He takes me out and I serve, but it seems like that's less and less these days. But there's some work being worked out. I feel that definitely. Sometimes I know exactly what it's connected to. And other times, not as much. But I still have the definite feeling. There's something being worked out here by God. And it's wonderful. I can feel that light, that power, that grace, not only within my being, but going out from me. And it's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's God doing His work. In all lives, even if you're bhakti, a lover of God, even if you're yani, that you're discriminating between what is God and what is not God, we are all still karma yogis. We all still act in this world. There's still service for us to do. And that service will look differently. Papa oftentimes said that the love of God and feeling the love of God is incomplete if it's not connected with being of service in this world. So this helps bring us balance. But there are many ways to serve in this world. And so we find that way. I remember Papa reading about Papa one time, and Mataji had him all wrapped up because he had a little bit of a scratchy throat, and she didn't want him catching any kinds of illness at all, and told him not to go out and speak to anybody. And suddenly Papa's up, and he's pacing back and forth and back and forth, and finally he takes a scarf off and says, sometimes Ram Dass must do what Ram Dass must do. And he went out and he met with everyone. Because he was just feeling God stirring up inside of himself. He had to do it. And so he was being of service in this way. So let us practice that sannyas within ourselves. Let us practice being dispassionate for this, for the things that really commandeer our attention. We can sense whether it's too much in the sense that it supersedes our connection with God. That's the primary thing. And when we do, we set it aside. We use all of our will. I will not go down that road. And we set it aside and we put God first. I can tell you any time in my life when I have not done that, I have lived to regret it. So this becomes our determination. And we follow in the footsteps, even though we might not be wearing an orange cloth, as Swami Satchitananda said. There are many who live the householder's life. But inwardly, they're not attached to any of it. There's a lovely group of souls. They were a family who came in. And apparently their father, they were all adults, but their father had died the week before, and they came in and they had traveled from a distant part of India and were talking to Swamiji about it. And their father had been in perfect health up until the day that he passed. And that morning he woke up with some dysentery, and very quickly he became disoriented, and they realized he was in trouble. They got him to the hospital right away. And he didn't live very long, even when he was at the hospital. But by the time he got to the hospital, he didn't recognize his children. He didn't know where he was, but he was chanting Ram Nam. And he did right up until his last breath, even when he was disoriented to everything else in life. And when they were talking about this, there was definitely, they started out with a feeling of grief that their father had passed. But there is such a feeling of sacredness in the room as they recounted his last hours, and that he was chanting Ram Nam right up until the last, and everyone was uplifted and feeling the beauty of that passing. This can only come through a lifetime of commitment and practice. But when it comes, it makes everything absolutely perfect. And we know that God is behind every single thing that happens in our lives. That's real renunciation, knowing that, really feeling that. That God is perfectly orchestrating every single thing. Then our attention, then our mind is completely and totally focused on God alone. So let us follow in Papa's footsteps in that sense. That we learn to put God first and be so focused on Him that we feel His bliss and joy and light and upliftment always. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Pranams. Bow to the great light of God within you.